You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hello, I'm Miles O'Brien in for Leonard all this week. The Norwegian novelist Per Pedersen's books on family and loss have won him much international acclaim. His latest novel, I Curse the River of Time, turns to alienation, nostalgia, and collapsing structures. It takes place during the fall of 1989 when the Berlin Wall is coming down. Just like Arvid, the protagonist's marriage is falling apart. It's published by Grey Wolf Press, and it's just been translated into English. And we're so glad that Per Pedersen just flew in from Oslo, and boy, are his arms tired. He hasn't had any sleep. So thank you for being with us. We know it's kind of hard being jet-lagged and having to do a book tour.
It's strange, I can tell you. I'm walking on air.
Yeah, well, you know, a little adrenaline, a little caffeine will keep you going, I guess. All right, so it's your prose is wonderful. It's very spare.
So they tell me.
it reminded me in all the good ways of reading some Hemingway short stories years ago, and I assume you enjoy that comparison. Lay out the story for us of Arvid, and give us the basics of what we see as we enter into this world.
Well, it's a little difficult because, you know, I chose the year 1989. I just chose it not because of the politics, but it was a year before my mother died. So suddenly I realized a lot of other things did happen that year. But it's about their relationship, the mother and the son, whom I think is more alike than they believe they are. So they have always been longing for each other, I think, but they sort of never hit the mark and they are not so good at timing. This year she has learned that she has stomach cancer. She lives in Norway. She's really Danish, but have been living in Norway for 40 years. And she decides she wants to go home, as she says. It's still home for her, this town in northern Jutland in Denmark. And she leaves. But the son, Arvid, who is now 37 years old, always wanting to be loved by his mother, he follows her, although very uninvited, we could say. And when she comes, it's really, he disturbs her process, or what you would call it, that she thinks she maybe will die, and she wants to think about things. And here comes this puppy, 37 years old, still wanting her. And it's those days, they are together, like 3-4 days, and then everything else, because I kind of jump back and forth in time, which is what I always do.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way that you you take us into his thought process back and forth. But he arrives to his mother not there to give but to take, doesn't he?
Yeah, he sort of imagines for himself that he is there to give, but really it's the other way around. And she knows him, so she realizes that at once, and it's a little tiresome.
It's your book, it seems to me, a lot of it is about space. Geographic space, emotional space that are between people. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, geographical space is always close to me. I've always been writing. When I write about something being thought or said or happening, I always want to know where. And so I always sort of have the landscape with me. I've always been like that. I always look at the landscape, whatever I do. And, space, it's a little... Arvid Jansson, my protagonist, he's kind of narrow in his head. He's really under stress, and he doesn't have much space to move on.
Well, we should tell people a little bit about his stress. He's, in addition to his mother being ill, he's contending with a divorce.
Definitely.
And he is a person who embraced communism in the 70s. And I guess the fall of the Berlin Wall must have been, in some respects, there must have been some disappointment in all of that.
It is disappointment. In one way, and you don't know about this in America, I guess, but he's kind of a Maoist, which is not like the Soviet communist movement.
Which, by the title, is borrowed from...
From Mao Zedong, poem by Mao Zedong. That's right. But anyway, I mean, the point is, of course, that in the Berlin, he being so political, and the Berlin Wall falls, and he really hasn't noticed. And that is some of his problem, and that's kind of, if you call it a theme... It's like you have to pay attention when something really important happens. You have to pay attention when the whole world changes and he hasn't paid attention. And he is going to be divorced, and in a way it comes as a surprise for him, you should think. So his mind is on other things, and so he misses he goes wrong with the choices. They are always a little too late.
So he's living his life and not paying enough attention to the things that count? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so. It's a common thing, though, but he sounds a little pathetic.
Yeah, he is a little bit of a pathetic character. And I know you draw a little bit upon your own story from him, so I assume you're not going to call yourself pathetic. But tell me about how you created Arvid. You've used him now for, is it two or three novels?
In fact, it's four books. I had a short story. My first book was a short story collection, but I didn't think I could write a novel, so I made short stories about the same boy.
Right.
Which is Arvid Jansen.
But this is a character you like. How did you make Arvid?
What I do is it took me a long while to get to it. I tried to be a writer for many, many years, and I couldn't do it, and it was the only thing I wanted to do. And then suddenly one day I started to write this little short story, and it was about Arvid Jansen, and of course it was about my environment, and the family looked a little, not quite, but like my family. I have this expression that you say, why should you go across the river to get water? It's all here. So
write what you know, right?
Yeah, write what you know. So I started there with this family, and Arvid Jansen was kind of he was my boy. And later I called him not my alter ego, but kind of my stunt man, is how I say it. Yes, because he goes through things for a very short time. Let's see, 2 weeks, he's under pressure, whereas I was in 2 years, but much thinner. So what happens to a man who has this massive pressure in like very short time? One of the answers is that you become a little funny, I found out, because pain and comedy sometimes is very related, because you behave in a strange way if you have a lot of pain in your body.
Well, you know, you're alluding to an interesting thing that writers do. And I assume this is how you go about it. You create a character. You're not sure what's going to happen.
Definitely.
To that character. Explain how that works.
Well, it's strange that it works. But I'm not good at plotting things. I mean, I don't really know how to do that.
You don't have an outline. You don't know, chapter three, he'll do this.
No, chapter four. Nothing.
Yeah.
I just have the previous page, in a way. And it's something I learned from my first editor, because I was worried about the whole book, and I was, you know, on page 23 and working with these small things, and I said, the whole book. Don't mind the whole book. Nobody's seen the whole book. Be good where you are, then the book will be good. It may not be the book you thought you would write. Who cares? Nobody saw that book.
That's some good advice, huh?
Very good. It was very good advice for me, because I was kind of scared.
Well, it's overwhelming otherwise, isn't it?
And yes, especially if you don't have a plot.
So with that in mind, the pace of your books is, well, it's not like reading a Tom Clancy novel, you know what I mean? It's a different kind of pace.
I haven't read a Tom Clancy novel.
Well, you know, action, 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 right?
I know.
You're not an action guy.
I'd like to be sometimes, you know, but not action in that sense, that in a Tom Clancy novel, whatever that is. I work from sentences and scenes. There could be action in the scene. I mean, he really do punches a guy really, really hard in this book. But that's a scene that develops from, you know, how he feels and how far should I take him. And so he responds to things that happen, but I don't know about that before I get there.
All right. I think we need to hear a little bit of this, of your prose. And before you read, you don't write in English, but you did, in fact, you were involved in the translation. Is that right?
I always am. Yeah. This is my fourth book in English, and I have been involved in all of them. And that's because that the translations weren't any good.
So you gotta.
So I have to read it. I have to write them in English for them.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. This is from the end of the book. It was true, she was not afraid of anything that I could think of, but I knew there were a few things she wanted to see before she died, wanted to experience. Of course, everybody felt that way, but she really wanted to see the Soviet Union collapse, now that the wall had come down, to be a part of that and what would follow, to see Gorbachev triumph or step down and say the whole thing had gone too far, which was not improbable. But in any case, it would be bitter if she did not get to live through it, and I too wanted to see it all, and probably I would. But when it came to dying, I was scared, not of being dead, that I could not comprehend. To be nothing was impossible to grasp, and therefore really nothing to be scared of. but the dying itself I could comprehend, the very instant when you know that now comes what you have always feared and you suddenly realize that every chance of being the person you really wanted to be is gone forever, and the one you were is the one those around you will remember. Then that must feel like someone's strong hand slowly tightening their grip around your neck until you can breathe no more. And not at all as when a door is slowly pushed open and bright light comes streaming out from the inside and a woman or a man you have always known and always liked, maybe always loved, leans out and gently takes your hand and leads you into a place of rest so mild and so fine from eternity to eternity. "Why don't we go back up?" I said. "I want to stay here for a bit. You go back," she said. "I will come later." "Are you sure?" I said. "Yes, of course I'm sure," she said, "but I felt it would be wrong on me to leave, so I stayed," and she said, "Be off with you then." So I had to go. "All right," I said.
Arvid is filled with regret, isn't he?
Yes. He is filled with regret because of what I told you about, you know, the choices, and that he feels that things are too late. And obviously, he believes maybe that his mother is going to die, and then he feels regret because they didn't really get along, did they? And he so wanted to. He wanted to have her, but he thinks maybe that she didn't want him.
Well, since he's your stuntman, does he handle the regret for you?
Oh, you think like therapy writing?
Yeah, is it therapy?
Nah, yeah. No, if you want therapy, go to your psychiatrist. Don't go to literature. The literature should sort of open the wounds, not heal them, I think.
Did this open wounds for you?
Oh, definitely.
Tell me about them.
Oh, no, but yeah. It was very interesting, though, to write about this mother, because she is a little like my mother. But what you do is you have these few qualities that your mother perhaps have, and then you take those, you blow them up and make it to a new person. And that was very interesting, because then I didn't have to look at my mother. I looked at this lady instead.
Do you think you understand your mother better now?
In a way, some of her personality, maybe, yes.
This is a book. It's kind of cold reading it. There's a lot of reference. It is, after all, Scandinavia, but dim light, coldness.
This summer is pretty warm, you know.
is that a deliberate thing? Deliberately symbolic of the emotional state of the people involved?
No, I don't use symbols. I don't know what a symbol is really. It's just weather.
Don't get deeper than that.
No,
it's just
because
weather.
Somebody said you always use you know, the sea as a symbol. I said it's just there, you know. If you live by the
just
sea,
just the sea. It's just some water, huh?
Yeah, but it's nice and it's good and it's cold and big and everything you want to. But it's not a symbol. It's the sea.
Oh, so taking a ship, starting off with a ship going across a body of water, means nothing more than just getting on a ship.
No, but you know, to go with a ship is a good thing. It feels good and. You get from one place to another. It doesn't have to be. I mean, it means what it means, which is enough and much.
All right. So what's next for Arvid? Can you tell us? I assume you've thought about, well, you don't do plots, so.
No, I don't do plots, and I don't really know what the next book will be. But what you do is when you sort of deliver your manuscript and before that book is out, you have to start a new one. And it is not about Arvid. He's having a rest now.
Arvid's taking a break. Can you tell us what you're doing?
It's a new book. It's, action-wise, it's a little more violent than this one. It's not like a hillbilly book, but it's from outside Oslo in the countryside and, violent.
The Norway Hillbillies. Who knew?
Who knew?
Per Pettersen, it's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
His novel is I Curse the River of Time, just his latest one. It's published by Grey Wolf Press. Per Pettersen will be in conversation with Catherine Lapner at the Union Square Barnes & Noble tonight at 7 p.m. Hopefully he'll get a nap in between now and then. For more information, you can head to our show page, wnyc.org. Per, thanks again.
Thank you.
Have a good trip.